Welcome back. This is Barbara Ridenour with the second half hour of the Decatur Herald and Review, dated Friday, September 11th, 2020. We'll continue today's reading with the obituaries. Shelby Joanne Williams, 75, of Decatur, died on September 5th, 2020. Cremation rites will be accorded. A graveside service for family will occur Friday, September 18th, 2020, at Mount Gilead Cemetery in Decatur. There will be a celebration of life held at a later date. Memorial contributions may be directed to the Cross Foundation in Effingham, Illinois. Dawson and Wyckoff Funeral Home are in charge of arrangements. Dave William Campbell Jr. of Decatur died on September 7th, 2020. Services are TBD at a later date. Mickey Allen Mick McCamick, 70, of Decatur, died on Monday, September 7th, 2020. Visitation will be from 4 to 6 p.m. Sunday, September 13th, 2020, at Heartland Community Church. Funeral service to celebrate his life will be held at 10 a.m. Monday, September 14th, 2020, at Heartland Community Church, Decatur, Illinois. Burial will take place at a later date at Graceland Cemetery. Casual dress, wear your boots, and if you can't come, watch a Western. In lieu of flowers, memorials may be made to Water Street Mission, Heartland Community Church, Stepping Into Freedom Group, and or Food Pantry. The McCamick family is being served by Moran and Goble Funeral Home and Cremation Services of Decatur. Gloria J. Gambrill, 85, of Niantic, died on September 8, 2020. Private family memorial service will be held at a later date. Brentlinger and Earl Funeral Homes, Decatur, is assisting the family. Memorials in Gloria's honor may be made to St. Jude Children's Research Hospital or Niantic Fire Department of Niantic, Illinois. Brentlinger and Earl Funeral Home are assisting the family. Lloyd C. Outlaw Jr., Junebug. Lloyd C. Outlaw Jr., Junebug, age 66, died on September 6, 2020. Homegoing services for Lloyd will be at 10 a.m. on Saturday, September 12th, at Moran and Goble Funeral Home and Cremation Services, Decatur, with visitation being held today, September 11th, from 5 to 7 p.m. at the funeral home. Burial will be in Greenwood Cemetery in Decatur. The family requests no physical contact with the family during the visitation and homegoing services. CDC guidelines, along with temperature screenings, are required, and required face masks will be adhered to at the funeral home. Moran and Goble Funeral Home are in charge of arrangements. Now we'll turn to the opinion page and continue with letters to the editor. Father was neither sucker or loser. Donald Trump said that only an animal would say the things. Donald Trump said that only an animal would say the things about our troops that he was reported to have said. What kind of animal is Donald Trump? I suggest he is a jackass. My father fought in Europe during World War II. He was neither a sucker nor a loser. Signed, Thomas Crone, Decatur. A fine line of evaluating outrage. When The Atlantic reported President Trump's alleged remarks on fallen American soldiers being losers and suckers, I hoped that Joe Biden would delay judgment until we knew more. No such luck. Instead, Biden responded with fist-pounding, stem-faced stern-faced fury and a applause line oratory that prompts cheers when invoking our military. Would it have hurt his cause to show a little restraint before defaulting to an all-out attack mode? Yes, it probably would have. I should have known better by now. My dad was frustrated by President George H.W. Bush's tendency to feign anger when making a point, especially during election campaigns. Righteous indignation, I believe, was another term he used. Most of us aren't mind readers, but there seems to be a fine line between genuine passion and a well-rehearsed bit of theater. So many figures in sports, politics, and show business express outrage when the term has lost some of its sting. Kamala Harris's little girl was me moment in the Democratic presidential debate drew a lot of attention and likely served its purpose. I don't doubt that Miss Harris has strong feelings about busing, but I thought her remarks came off as a bit practiced. Maybe it's just me. I'm not naive enough to expect that campaign to turn civil anytime soon. We all know this election is a referendum on President Trump's character. If I had written solely about Trump's typical campaign demeanor and tweets, this letter would almost never end. I focused mostly on Democrats because they promised us a return to civility. If they win in November, let's hope they can deliver. Signed, Jim Newton, Itasca. Thumbs up, thumbs down. Thumbs up to the effort to discourage vaping. Approximately 8,000 students begin using a vape pen every day, according to the CDC, resulting in more than 1 in 4 high schoolers and 1 in 10 middle schoolers vaping at least once per month. The American Lung Association has announced a comprehensive plan to tackle electronic tobacco use by the nation's high schoolers. The effort to reduce tobacco consumption worked well. Companies will always find ways to market potentially damaging products to children, and we regularly have to find ways to counteract that marketing. Thumbs down to do-nothing politicians. It's been months since Americans received a bit of financial relief amid the pandemic crisis. We have continued to suffer through the worst joblessness in the country in a century. Yet Congress was unable to walk away, was able to walk away, to go on vacation while people remained jobless and the legislators appear prepared to do the same thing with their brief present return. If you think all is fine and dandy, cast your vote on November 3rd. If you're disgusted, take a look at the incumbents and decide how many you want to return. Thumbs up to Millikan University. The Decatur University has been named a best bang for the buck Midwest University in Washington Monthly's 2020 College Guide and Rankings. For the second consecutive year, Millikan was ranked among the top 50 in the category at number 40 of 372 schools. Thumbs down to Leadfoots. Some drivers took advantage of roads and highways emptied by the coronavirus pandemic at its start, and they haven't backed off. The Iowa State Patrol recorded a 101% increase from January through August over the four-year average in tickets for speeds exceeding 100 miles an hour, along with a 75% increase in tickets for speeds of 25 miles an hour or more over the posted speed limit. Numbers for California's upwards of more than 15,000 tickets from mid-March through August 19th for 100 miles per hour plus speeds, doubling last year's numbers. It's tempting to treat life like a dystopian story, especially when you're on a flat road that appears empty for miles and you're driving something that can go fast. Thumbs up to the Friends of Lincoln Trail Homestead State Park and Memorial. They spearheaded a Saturday morning cleanup at the 80-acre area in western Macon County. They were removing brush, honeysuckle, a non-native invasive plant. You know that, you know what wetting your own garden You know what weeding your own garden feels like. Multiply that quite a bit to picture the amount of work the volunteers accomplished. And the cartoon, a political cartoon today, shows twin towers in letters. And the first tower spells, from top to bottom, spells the word courage. And the second tower, from top to bottom, spells the word resolve. And the rest at the bottom is the cityscape of New York and a darkness around the bottom of the towers. Back to local and state news. Police: man arrested after striking son, Decatur. Police say a Decatur man was arrested on preliminary domestic battery for a fight with his 16-year-old son. Police and court documents said the 38-year-old man, at about 6:30 p.m. Wednesday, slapped his son for being disrespectful, and the two became involved in a struggle in the 2500 block of East Logan Street, where he attempted to restrain the teen. The teen then fled on foot to a nearby church, where he was picked up in a car by a relative and drove off, causing the father to throw his cell phone at the vehicle, documents say. According to police, the 16-year-old said that his dad had struck him in the head multiple times during the altercation. Police say two bumps were found on the boy's head. The man was arrested and booked into Macon County Jail on a preliminary charge of domestic battery, which is subject to review by the state's attorney's office. A check of jail records Thursday afternoon showed the man had been released on $500 bond, meaning the initial bail was set at $5,000. Beautify Decatur, officials seek another in-bloom win. Decatur. Members of the Beauty Decatur Coalition are working to put Decatur on the map once again. Decatur was awarded the People's Choice Award during the 2018 America in Bloom competition, highlighting the beauty of the areas around the U.S. Ellen Hearn, American in Bloom chairwoman for Decatur. Highlighting the beauty of areas around the U.S., period. Ellen Hearn, America in Bloom chairwoman for Decatur, said the $1,500 prize money with the 2020 award will help continue beautification efforts around the city. The $1,500 winnings from 2018 helped fund Little Critter, a deer-shaped sculpture filled with trash at Overlook Adventure Park, and the watering of hanging plants in downtown Decatur, Hearn said. An additional $1,500 was awarded in 2018 for Decatur winning the Judge's Choice Award, which won't be featured this year. We are the largest community competing, so we should win this, but it will take a lot of votes to overcome the enthusiasm of other communities participating, Hearn said. Competing cities were required to submit videos highlighting parts of each city. According to Hearn, they were required to limit the videos to 3 minutes and are judged on 7 criteria: historic preservation, environmental efforts, flowers, landscaping, overall impression, community vitality, and community involvement. The Decatur group worked with city leaders in 2018 in an effort to capture treasures the community offers, Hearn said. A modified version of the video was submitted for the 2020 competition that now includes pictures of the Devon Lakeshore Amphitheater. Highlighted parts of the city include the Meaningful Meadows Outdoor Activity Center at Macon Resources Incorporated, Duane Andreas Ag Academy, funded by the Howard G. Buffett Foundation, and Prescription Produce Garden at Crossing Healthcare. This is an opportunity to brag about the good things happening in our community, and I think we need some good news, Hearn said. We are competing at the national level because we have a lot to brag about here. Also competing for the prize are Bruton, Alabama, and Castle Rock, Washington. Vote at surveymonkey.com/r/8NN6XV. A winner will be announced on October 2nd. Again, if you want that, it's vote at surveymonkey.com/r/8NN6X3V. A winner will be announced on October 2nd. The Beautify Decatur Coalition began in 2012, and the group was accepted into the American in Bloom competition in 2017. In state news, Chicago to replace toxic water pipes. Chicago plans to begin replacing toxic lead water pipes across the city after decades of downplaying the potential health threat to the public. The Department of Water Management on Wednesday shared with the Chicago Tribune its plans to replace 750 of the roughly 400,000 lead service lines connecting homes to street mains. Former city officials, including former Mayor Rahm Emanuel, denied for years that drinking water from household faucets could be harmful. It's great that Mayor Lightfoot has done what none of her predecessors had the courage to do, which is to acknowledge the problem, said Miguel del Toro, a retired U.S. Environmental Protection Agency official who had a key role in identifying similar threats in Flint, Michigan, and East Chicago, Indiana. Like other cities, also replacing lead service lines, Chicago will rely on federal grants and low-interest loans to finance its work. Emanuel, as mayor, did not apply for money to replace lead service lines. Lightfoot said the city's water is tested often and is safe to drink as chemicals are added to the water system. However, replacements are needed as pipes are disturbed by road work, and researchers have found dangerous lead particles can get into drinking water. Most of the $19 million that is earmarked for next year will be used in low-income neighborhoods where children are also at risk from lead-based paint. Lead can harm people at any age, but is especially dangerous to children, potentially damaging the brain and nervous system and causing learning and behavior problems. Lightfoot's administration plans to coordinate the replacement of service lines and water mains to make the work more cost-effective. We need to work on our coordination with other utilities, said Andrea Cheng, an assistant water commissioner. We are going to need a lot of public outreach. Learning how it all works on this one block will inform our bigger program in the future, she said. Postal worker indicted on federal charge, Carbondale. A Carbondale postal worker has resigned after being confronted with charges that she embezzled mail in May. A Thursday news release from U.S. Attorney for the Southern District of Illinois, Stephen D. Weinhoft, said that an indictment was handed down on Tuesday charging Athens A. Shorey, a.k.a. Athens A. DeMartini, 33 of Cobden, with embezzling mail. According to the release, the indictment alleges that between May 23rd and May 27th, Shorey embezzled mail that had been entrusted to her for delivery. In total, 13 pieces were taken, some of which were from banks. The release said after the alleged embezzlement was discovered, Shorey resigned her position with the Postal Service. The release also said that each of the two embezzlement charges comes with two potential 5 years in prison and a fine of up to $250,000. She will be arraigned at 10:45 a.m. September 28th at the federal courthouse in Benton. Two rejected for marijuana licenses, Sioux State. Chicago. Two companies that were rejected for Illinois marijuana licenses have filed a lawsuit to delay the state from awarding licenses to the winning applicants. The state announced that only 21 of 700 applicants would proceed to a lottery for 75 licenses. South Shore Restore and Heartland Greens did not make the cut and are suing the state's Department of Financial and Professional Regulation, which regulates dispensaries, and Brett Bender, Deputy Director of the Cannabis Control Section. The applicants allege in the suit that was filed Friday that the 21 groups are potentially or politically connected insider companies. The suit also says that at least one of the 21 companies lists as a manager a person identified on LinkedIn as a risk consultant for KPMG, a firm that scored the applications. Jim McGann, a KPMG spokesman, said in a statement that the person mentioned in the lawsuit was not involved in the scoring process. The suit also alleges that the department's decision to not give the unsuccessful applicants any opportunity to challenge their ineligibility is unconstitutional. A department spokesperson did not return the Chicago Tribune's request for comment. Lawyers representing the two applicants also did not return the newspaper's request for comment. Every applicant in the lottery received a perfect score. The lawsuit alleges that South Shore Restore and Heartland Greens should have too. To get a perfect score, each applicant had to achieve social equity status and veteran status, meaning at least 51% of the organization must be owned by a veteran or group of veterans. South Shore and Heartland are majority owned by social equity applicants and military veterans. To your good health, regular exercise, moderate diet are best for diabetes prevention. Dear Dr. Roach, I've been taking the statin Zocor for past 30 years. I understand that one of the side effects is diabetes. I will be 84 in August, and I have a family history of diabetes. Last year, my A1C reading put me in the pre-diabetes range. I have remained active by walking, using small weights, etc., and I watch my calorie intake. I weigh 199 pounds at 5 feet 11 inches tall. I was disappointed with a follow-up A1C reading because I thought my actions would take me out of the pre-diabetic range. I'm aware that after 65, the pancreas produces less insulin. What are your recommendations? Signed, RC. Answer. For most people, for most people with diabetes, resistance to insulin is the primary reason. This is opposed to decreased insulin output. Although the pancreas does lose some ability to make insulin with age, the mechanisms by which statins predispose a person to diabetes are not clear, and they probably include both resistance to insulin and decreased production. Regular exercise and moderate diet are the mainstays of diabetes prevention. Since you are walking and weightlifting, diet is the most likely place where you might be able to make changes. Even so, it may not be possible to prevent diabetes entirely. Visit a registered dietitian, nutritionist for some personalized dietary advice. Your body mass index, or BMI, is 27.8. A few pounds of weight lost, I really do mean just a few pounds, could reduce your risk of developing diabetes in the future. But you would want to lose weight the right way through a healthy diet and regular exercise. Even though statins increase the risk of developing diabetes in those people who are predisposed to developing diabetes, the benefit in preventing heart attack outweighs the risk. That is, as long as statins are appropriately prescribed to people with existing heart disease or those at very high risk. The benefits of statins in people with no known heart disease lessen with advancing age, and I seldom prescribe statins to people over 85 unless they are known to have blockages in the arteries. Dear Dr. Roach, I am a 63-year-old female who has suffered with Epstein-Barr virus twice in the past 2 years. My understanding is that for many people, the virus lies dormant until a trigger, such as stress, causes it to emerge. My symptoms consisted of fever, extreme exhaustion, and weakness. After 3 weeks, I am slowly feeling better. I never want to feel like this again. Aside from maintaining a healthy diet, exercising, and stressing less, do you have any suggestions as to how I can stay symptom-free in the future? Signed, RK. Answer. Epstein-Barr virus is the classic cause of infectious mononucleosis, which is a common condition in children and adolescents. Its symptoms of early fever followed by days or weeks of fatigue are nonspecific. Other viruses and even a parasite can cause similar symptoms. Blood testing can confirm the diagnosis. EBV is in the herpes family, and like all herpes viruses, it does lay dormant in the body. Unlike herpes simplex or varicella zoster, it is very unlikely to recur. It is very rare to get mononucleosis from EBV more than once, although it happens occasionally if the immune system is severely depleted, such as in advanced HIV. It is almost unheard of to get it at age 63. Blood test results for EBV can be misinterpreted. If you ever had EBV, say in childhood, you will have a positive antibody test for the IgG, immunoglobulin, antibodies. Active infection stimulates the IgM antibodies. I suspect you may have had IgG antibodies that were misinterpreted as active infection. If you really had recurrent EBV with positive IgM antibodies for or other more precise tests of viral activity, then a visit with an immunologist and an infectious disease specialist is wise. Your own advice, healthy diet, regular exercise, decreased stress are all good, common sense ways of improving your immune system. I would add regular sleep to the list, and unless you really have had active EBV, which would surprise me, you shouldn't need more than that. And the picture for the History Corner, a look back, is from 1976, and it shows the Reverend Donald Seton and his wife enjoying a game of Scrabble. Looks like Scrabble, I think. As his sons, Donald III and Jeffrey, watch. The pastor of Community Church of God, located at 1549 East Locust Street, he was fond of saying, "My philosophy is wrapped up in one word. Love. That is the primary thing. If we get people to love," he said. Today's highlight in history: on September 11th, 2001, nearly 3,000 people were killed as 19 Al-Qaeda hijackers seized control of four jetliners, sending two of the planes into New York's World Trade Center, one into the Pentagon, and the fourth into a field in western Pennsylvania. On September 11th in 1777, during the American Revolution, forces under General George Washington were defeated by the British in the Battle of Brandywine. And in 1789, Alexander Hamilton was appointed the first U.S. Secretary of the Treasury. In 2008, presidential candidates John McCain and Barack Obama put aside politics as they visited Ground Zero together on the anniversary of 9/11 to honor its victims. That's all we have time for this Friday edition of the Decatur Herald and Review, dated September 11th, 2020. This is Barbara Ridenour. I look forward to reading with you again soon. Have a pleasant weekend and week to follow.